And we are live. What's going on, folks? Welcome to episode 8 of the Nuclear Golf Podcast. My name is John. I'm the co-owner of Nuclear Golf and TW Legion. And I'm joined tonight by my co-host Tim Bowman, Hutch Bennett, and Joey from Scheffler Fans. Got lots to discuss this week, coming off Scheffler's first win of the season. So we'll have some insight from Scheffler Fans on for that. We're also going to be talking about Jordan Spieth, who's rounded into form just in time for the PGA, where he'll be looking to complete the career Grand Slam. Colin Morikawa has actually made a pretty significant change. He's swapped caddies. Pretty notable name is joining his bag. The block party continues at the PGA. I'm sure we'll get into that tonight. President's Cup captains have been announced for 2026 at... Oh, shit, it's blanking on me. Where's 2026 President's Cup is at? Medina. And we're also going to get into LIV world ranking points. There's some reports out there, again, that LIV is in discussions to have world ranking points. So I'm sure that'll be a heated discussion between Tim and Hutch. So we'll see where that goes. And we've also got our big discussion post of the week and our viral video of the week. So without further ado, fellas, let's get into it. Let's chat about the CJ Cup Byron Nelson over the weekend. I'm not sure if you guys had a chance to watch. Scottie Scheffler completely ran away with it with a Tiger Woods 2000 style performance, just absolute domination. Tim, did you have a chance to see any of that?
I didn't catch, I followed it more on my phone. So I didn't get to see a lot of the shots, but he was what, 9 under yesterday, 8 under, and he had an 8-shot lead going in. There wasn't a whole lot to follow, just more or less how many he was going to win by. He's not known for blowing leads or anything like that, so it would have been a 1 in a million. Somebody would have had to shoot 58, and I just didn't see that happening. So I followed it on the phone, and he, every birdie that the guys behind him made, he made one too.
Yeah. Hodge, did you have a chance to take a look? Or?
Yeah, I mean, I watched some of it yesterday. It's kind of similar to what Tim was saying. It's hard when somebody's up by that much. Now, obviously, Joey being a super fan, like, it, and Tim drew the comparison to how it used to be for Tiger, like, I know us three would have locked in and watched every hole of it if it was Tiger, right? Like, and just soaked it all up. So I'm sure it's the same for Joey. Huge tournament though for him, and good for him to get back in the winner's circle. And I know he's been missing that one little bit this year so far. It looked like he just kind of put it all together. I saw some tweet that said he was pretty much first in every category for the week out there. Like strokes gained off the tee, driving accuracy, like strokes gained, putting, all the birdies, all the stuff. Like, he was just lighting it up, and maybe Joey could give us a little more insight on that. But yeah, great week for him, and obviously for the tour, that's a good thing to have the biggest name in that tournament kind of carry it.
Joey, it was an 8 under 63 in the final round yesterday for Scottie. He finished, what was he? He was 8 clear of Van Ruyen, who finished second. Just a all-around insane performance from Scheffler. First win of the season. What are your initial thoughts on the win? And what do you think is kind of coming up for Scottie the rest of the way this year?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, like we said, it's kind of good to get him back in the winning circle. We talked on last episode that I did think that this would probably be the week he did it. Just a course that he plays well. Obviously, he's got that hometown feel, and just he's confident here. So, I mean, he turned on the jets, and I think it's just been a good amount of time. I think the hand thing threw him off a little bit. I think just the courses he kind of came onto didn't really match a good start for him to pick back up winning. And I think this week just provided him – I mean, the course was giving him layups, which it really didn't lay up, but I mean, just for Scottie, it's just such right up his alley. So yeah, he absolutely ran away with it. I feel bad for Van Ruyen, like, to play that well and just still be 8 strokes back. Just, I mean, he played great yesterday as well, so I mean, nothing the poor guy could do. But just, you know, when you're trailing Scottie, it's got to be just
helpless.
Yeah, absolutely. when Scotty's back to throwing darts with one arm follow throughs, just forget about it. Just turn the TV off and go do something else.
I mean, that bunker shot for Eagle, I think that was the second round, or maybe, I don't know. I was watching it work, but I mean, just to hit that shot out of the bunker to a couple feet, like, that's last year Scotty, and it's just great to see him kind of, you know, gain some confidence. Y'all saw him obviously get a little choked up after the round, so I think it just all kind of culminated at once, and it just kind of fell into the cards at the right time. So, yeah, looking forward. I mean, he's playing a lot of golf soon. I think the Memorial, again, acts as kind of a good spot to stay winning and stay hot. And, you know, I'm looking forward. We're getting to the peak of golf here. Summer's coming up. We're getting some hot events, and it's a good time to get hot. So hopefully he stays that way.
Joey, here's a crazy, crazy stat. So he gained 18.2 strokes on the field this week with his ball striking. That's his stroke gains off the tee plus his strokes gained approach.
Good.
It's the most in a measured 72-hole PGA Tour event for any player since 2007, according to Justin Ray.
Tiger.
It has to be. I don't know who else it would be at that in that time frame. And then, Joey, the other thing we were tracking closely was the lowest 72-hole score totals for the week. He was one shot away, right, from breaking tour history. He would have been he needed 252. He tied the record with 253. He tied Ludvig Åberg, and he tied JT.
Yeah, JT Colt on the broadcast was saying that JT had texted him and was like, you know, tell Scotty to go out there and kind of, you know, having to bogey 17 and par 18, he's like, hey, maybe Scotty can just toss me a layup. And that actually ended up happening. I mean, 17, he kind of just, we've all been there. It's that chip laying up right on the edge of the collar. And he thought, you know, he gave it enough and it just didn't get up. So rolled back down. And ended up, yeah. And he's made a, 7-foot bogey putt that could easily turn into a double. So kind of a shame that he didn't kind of at least just par out in those last two to secure that record. But you know what? Now he's got in the back pocket and he's going to go beat it 252.
So by all indications or by any normal standards for a PGA Tour player, Scotty's had an incredible start to the season. He's played 9 events and he has 6 top 10s. I mean, he was runner up at the Houston Open, 4th at the Masters, T8 at the RBC Heritage. He was also T9 at the AT&T earlier in the year, and he was T3 at the Genesis, and he was T11 at the API. So like 7.
But that's a bad year because he hadn't won yet.
I know.
For Scotty, I know.
It's a bad year by Scotty Scheffler standards, which just goes to show like this guy is, you know, top shit.
Did you see Spieth's presser after it? He just sounded so defeated.
Yeah,
it's inspiring, and I'm happy when Scotty wins because I love Scotty. But he's like, there was a time not that long ago where I was like, definitely better than he is, and now I'm not.
And then the 12th hole at Augusta came,
and now he's like, and now I'm not, and so I've got to work hard to get back to where I'm better than him. Which is, look, you know, you guys know how I feel about like birdie fest like that, but this one just felt a little different because it felt like just Scotty dismantling everybody.
Yeah,
like it's different than the regular 30 under par tournament.
Yeah, it's way different. I got the full quote from Spieth yesterday. What he's doing is very inspiring. What he's been doing is inspiring. Given it wasn't that long ago, I was definitely better than him, and now I'm definitely not right now, and I hate being mad about anybody. I mean, Jordan Spieth had quite a round yesterday. I believe he shot, what was it? Was it 62?
Yeah, I mean, he blistered it yesterday. He was hot. 62,
Yeah, so yeah, he shot 9 under 62. I believe he tied his career low yesterday.
Yeah.
Which is unbelievable. I mean, as we're heading into the PGA here, pretty soon at Quail Hollow, Jordan Spieth looking to complete the career Grand Slam. So he'll be the second guy this year with a chance to complete the career Grand Slam at a major. Jordan Spieth's had a pretty good season, right? He's had some good form. What are your expectations for him at the PGA?
I don't even know, because he's just such a roller coaster. Like, who has he been better than in the last 3 or 4 years? Like, I know he talked about Scotty in his presser, but I mean, the guy's it's not even a round to round thing. It's not even a back nine to front nine thing. It's literally like a three hole to three hole thing. He could go birdie, yeah, birdie, birdie, and he could go the next 3 holes, he could go bogey triple. And his inconsistency is why he is not better than some of the golfers, top golfers now. And he's the one that's got to fix it. I mean, he can, but he's got to fix it. I just don't know. I don't know. I'm not sure if his mental game and his game is ready for the back nine of a major currently. I don't know. It could be, but he's going to have to get in the mix in the back nine of a major in order for him to prove to me that he can do it again, because I haven't seen it in a while.
Tim, you're not wrong at all, actually. He hasn't had that good of a season. I mean, he does have like 4 top 20s in his last 4 starts. So he is like trending from where he was, kind of. And he did have a T4. He had a T4 in Phoenix, and he was T9 at the Cognizant. I mean, apart from that, he's had some mediocre finishes. He was 59th at the Players, T28 at Valspar. And then the past 4 weeks, he's been T12, T14, T18, and then the fourth place finish at the Byron. So
I just don't know what's happened to him, because he at one point just was on that trajectory of being, I don't know about saying being what Scotty is now, but he was just unstoppable. And I hate to say, like, Tim, that it was, you know, the 12th at Augusta or whatever, but like he definitely lost his game for a little bit. Kind of looked like he started to get it back towards the end of last year, and then he's had some flashes earlier this year. But you guys are right, he's just so up and down and wildly inconsistent. It's very confusing. But he when he's playing, he just looks so, to me, I don't know if it's just me reading it the certain way, like his body language and the way he swings and the practice swings and the rehearsals and stuff, it just looks like he's constantly fighting something. And I don't know if that could be just me. I'm not sure. But to me, it just looks like he's uncomfortable.
You're not wrong, Hutch. Because I think the same thing.
I'm usually not.
He has, except for Liv, but he has so many he has so many discussions with his caddy on dang near every shot that it's like he can't get committed to one shot the whole round. It just feels like he doesn't know if it's going left or right or straight or a 2-yard fade or a 3-yard draw. Yeah. He's like got to confer with his caddy and over everything. Oh, the wind. It's just like, man, chill out. Jordan, just play golf.
He's obviously not going to get back to like 2015 Jordan, but do you guys think he can even like get back to some sort of, I mean, what a half of that would still put him, you know, back to being one of the top 5 dominators in the you know, sport right now?
Sadly to me, it feels like it's going to be like a one-off. Like,
yeah,
I can absolutely see Jordan Spieth like winning another major or many, even multiple majors. I just think that it's going to be very spotty and sporadic. Like, it's just going to be when everything kind of comes together at the right time for him at the right course. He still has the ball striking when, you know, it can come together when it needs to. But I mean, if you go back in history here, like just look at his results in majors over the last, 5 seasons, 2019 through 2024. I mean, there's only 5 top 10s, right? Like through 20 starts. So it's been a struggle. Like, he's had missed cuts. He's had some mediocre finishes, like T30s, you know, T71 at the 2020 PGA. Like, there's been some poor finishes in there. And he did finish T14 at the Masters. So, I mean, it's trending in the right direction, but I mean, last year he was cut at the Masters. He was in the 40s in the other two majors, and at the US, at the Open, he was T25. So it's been a mixed bag for Jordan.
Are we now moving on to where like he's going to be? Since Rory got it done, is this going to be every PGA we talk about this, or is he not at that level? Because I don't know if he's at that level to where
I think this year it'll be I think this year will be like heavily talked about. Just he's kind of been hot lately, and obviously with Rory just doing it at the Masters. But I don't think it's going to be every year we're like, well, is Jordan, you know, unless he consistently improves and win a couple, you know, mid-level tournaments during the season, I would be thrilled if he did, but I'm not going to be sitting there before every tournament wondering if he's going to, you know, finally get it.
The one thing though that does give me like some cautious optimism about Jordan Spieth is if you actually look at Data Golf and look at his strokes gained putting, he's been trending in the right direction.
But if you look at where it was like in 2014, 15, 16, 17, then there's that huge dip in 2018. I'm sure you're looking at the same graph I'm looking at, but it's trending in the right direction, but it's still so below where it was. Mm-hmm. And I just don't know if it just seems like he's lost. That was such a huge part of his game, right? Like he could make anything from anywhere. At this point, it's just kind of I don't see that, and he's so wild at times off the tee that it's hard to keep everything in check. And I'm with you guys. I like what you're saying, John. It just feels like if he wins, it's just going to be one of those weeks where everything came together, and it's just a one off, not like a serious like consistent threat. But the kids are going to continue to love him, and he'll continue to be talked about, but I just don't see him in the same light that I would have maybe 6 or 7 years ago.
He's still up there in terms of like winning percentage. Like his PGA Tour winning percentage is 6%. He's won 11 tournaments out of the 181 events that he's played. I mean, it's still up there amongst, you know, the top players and stuff. So, I mean, this guy was a dominating force back in, I guess it was 2015, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, it's all there. This is the last kind of thing on Spieth. He said, I felt like my last 3 week stretch, which is San Antonio, Augusta, and Hilton Head, it was just, I felt like there was two easily avoidable shots per round, just random stuff. Like I thinned a bunker shot when I never thinned a bunker shot, or made a double when I should have made a par. Like random 1 in 50 situations that I'm doing to myself. So, I mean, that's golf. If you were to sum up golf, like there's one of those, you know.
Yeah, the only problem with that comment is he's been doing that for like 4 years now. I mean, it hasn't been like just 2025, but I would totally go along with it if he was just this year in one of those things where he's trying to work out a swing thing or something and he's not comfortable with certain shots yet. But like he's been doing this for 4 years where he's just had like, I mean, he would be 6 under par after 9 holes and then make a triple on 11 or something like that. And it's like, where'd that hole come from? And then he would say, oh, that's my 1 in a 50 chance of that. And like you were saying, and then it turned around that could have been a 65 into a 70, and Jordan's now out of contention for Sunday or something like that.
Yeah, for sure. It'll be interesting to see if Jordan's able to find it at some point. It would be exciting. I mean, Jordan Spieth truly does move the needle in golf. Like the rate, he's one of the three guys, Tiger, Rory, and Jordan, that actually can move the needle when they're in contention. When they're up there, people tune in and watch. The ratings grow significantly when any of those three guys are at or near the top of the board. So, honestly, for the good of the game of golf, I hope that Jordan Spieth can figure it out at a major event or at a signature event or wherever it may be. I truly hope that Jordan Spieth can get back in the mix and win an event soon.
Is he really playing quick this week?
It's a signature, so I don't have the field in front of me, but he should be. Yeah,
he should be. I know Scotty's not, right? I think I saw Scotty was not in the field for this.
We'll get into the Truist in a bit, but the other big news of the past week was Colin Morikawa, who's decided to make a caddy change, parting ways with JJ Jakovac. After a 6-year relationship, you know, he was on with Dan Rappaport on Dan on Golf on Scratch. He was saying it wasn't an easy talk. You know, he reminisced about the memories that they've had together, but he said sometimes they need to, you know, make a change when things don't feel right on the course. And the guy he's bringing in was just on Max Homa's bag, right? He's going with Joe Greiner on his bag, an experienced veteran caddy who, I mean, Justin Thomas had him on the bag for a week as a fill-in, and JT won. So, I mean, if Colin Morikawa is searching for a similar result, I mean, it's positive in that way. But, you know, Colin Morikawa, you know, he's had some inconsistent play issues as well. Just either he gets cold with the putter, or his irons are off. He just can't figure it out sometimes. And he's another guy that, you know, hasn't been in contention as much as it feels like he should be given the talent level. What are your guys' thoughts on that caddy swap?
I mean,
for the caddy, it's huge, right? Like, Buddy went from Homa, who's been in a year-long struggle, to JT for a week in the winner's circle, and now he's on the bag of a top five player. Like, talk about just an upward trajectory over the past – what a wild month it's been for the caddy. I mean, that's – what a good job for him and huge for him.
I mean, Morikawa's kind of been not nearly God. I mean, nothing like Jordan Spieth, but it's that same kind of story where it's like, God, like, it's just this elite level, and then he just kind of dies off, and it's these – not that Spieth has ever really – you know, question Griner off the bag. And I, you know, that's been one consistent thing that hasn't changed. So I don't know, maybe Morikawa finds some, you know, new established. I think Morikawa is much more one really solid win away from gaining some confidence and then just kind of kicking back into action than Spieth is. I think his dip is way more shallow. So I would love
to see him. He's got a higher floor. You
know, yeah, exactly. Like, I would love to see him catch a win here and just get hot for a couple months, go win a major, go get back on top of the golf world. And he's a good personality. I mean, again, he had that stretch several years ago where it was just, he's like one of the loved guys in golf. He's damn good. He's a good personality. He's a young kid. He's smart. So
I agree. Morikawa, Tim, just 1 sec. Okay.
Right, good.
Morikawa did end on good terms with his caddy. He said, I hope guys are lining up for him because, look, I mean, if you look at his resume, look at what we've done simply over the past 6 years, it's incredible.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he said, I don't want to take anything away from what they've accomplished. He just said felt like it was time for a change.
And I sometimes guess we see that, like, you've seen this story before. Like, sometimes it just takes a shakeup like that to get something going, right? Just a new voice in your head or something like that to get something going. And maybe that's as simple as it is. I mean, we've seen guys question it before and maybe make the change too quick. But like Joey was saying, to Spieth's credit, it's been talked about for years about whether he should make a change at caddy, and he never did. They did the same thing to Rory for a while before he finally made a change. Then recently they've been doing the same thing before Rory got hot here, that they've been making the same thing about Harry Diamond. So maybe this is just a shakeup that he needs to kind of get back in the winner's circle and get back to where he needs to be as a – take his rightful place as a top five player on the PGA Tour.
I was just going to kind of piggyback off of what Joey was saying anyway, because I think Morikawa is way closer to returning to form than Spieth. Like, I think Morikawa, if he did win a tournament or a major, he could consistently be winning or – in the top five for an established number of years. I'm not as confident as Jordan doing that. So if Morikawa needed a caddy change to do that, that's good on him. But I just think regardless of his caddy situation, he's still pretty close. I mean, he still contends in some tournaments. He's even been leading tournaments on Sunday and not finished them, and that's somebody got hot, or he made a couple bogeys to finish second or third. I mean, he's been much more consistently closer to winning than Jordan has. So again, regardless of if he needed a new voice or a new caddy, I think he's closer.
Yeah, Tim, you're right. Actually, he has two solo second finishes this season. And he was top 10 at the Players as well, and he was T14 at the Masters. I mean, we all know that, like, if you're within the top 20 at a major, I mean, you've probably played pretty well that week, right? That's just one round difference from being in the mix or not. So, I mean, when it all kind of shakes out, he is right there. Like, his worst finish this year was the RBC Heritage, was a tie for 54th, but everything else, the other six events that he played, he was in the top 25. Actually, he was in the top 20. So, I mean, he's had some good finishes. He's just not able to get over the hump. Maybe he feels like he needs to make this change because there's something going on, like, in his head on the course when it comes to the communication with the caddy. It could be something really, you know, something intricate like that.
And all that stuff you just said right there before you got to talking about this, the caddy change, was stuff that we said about Scotty like a week ago, right? Like, he's there.
Yep.
He's close. It's just a matter of putting it together. And here we are a week later, and Scotty just boat raced everybody in the field. So who knows? Maybe Colin can do that this week.
And after seeing what Scotty did this last 4 days, it's amazing how poorly he played at the Masters and still finished in the top five. Like, that's absurd. He seriously had his C game at Augusta, and that I got nothing.
Yeah. I mean, he's just that good.
Yeah.
We'll see. Maybe this will be good for him.
At the 2024 Wells Fargo as well, which I believe would have been at Quail Hollow, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Last year.
He finished 3 under, and he was 3 shots. Yeah, he shot 67, 70, 72, 74 at the 2024 Wells Fargo. So, I mean, I'm just looking ahead to the PGA in a couple weeks just to kind of see how he's going to play there. But he described the course as a big boy golf course, Quail Hollow. So we'll see how Morikawa performs at the PGA with a new caddy.
Yeah, he should. I feel good about his – I mean, he's got some big plans to come in here. And if not, I know I spoke to the Memorial towards Scotty, but Colin, I think it was 2021 I was there, and he ended up in a playoff with Cantlay. I think Cantlay ended up edging him out with like a 20-foot drained putt. But Colin loves that place. Muirfield's like his bread and butter. So, like, give him a couple weeks to get, you know, dialed in here with Griner. And I don't know, as a midsummer, early summer, I think, you know, again, between JT, Jordan, Colin, like, these are the guys that we've been wanting to kind of, you know, get golf hot again. So, love to kind of see them at least inching towards that.
Plus, when you change caddies, it feels like there's just some weird extra spark for a couple of weeks where you play well.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
there's a shot in the arm.
I mean, nobody expected Homa to play well at the Masters, and he played awesome compared to what he's been doing for the last year. He made the cut, which everybody was betting on him to miss the cut. And I mean, he was grinding up there the whole week. So who knows? Like you said, a couple weeks, he could win.
All right. We got a major story here. So, I mean, for all the Michael Block guys out there, the Block party continues.
I love it.
At the PGA Championship this year. So he finished in a tie for third at the PGA Professional Championship, which awarded PGA Championship berths to the top 20 finishers across 72 holes. He still finished 11 strokes behind the winner, Tyler Collett. So Michael Block's going to be returning to the PGA Championship. I guess it would have been in, was it 2021? Yeah, it was 2021. When Michael Block went on that miraculous run at Oak Hill, he finished T15. Remember, he was playing with Rory. He made a hole in one. You know, it looked like he was going to win for a bit, which is insane. And it was 2023 PGA Oak Hill.
Yeah.
It's just wild. So it's crazy. Like, Michael Block, you guys remember, like, after that whole tournament, all of the fanfare that followed it, all the endorsement deals that this guy got?
Yeah, it was annoying.
Yeah.
He milked it.
No. He Buddy would have been universally loved if he didn't say that he was just as good as Rory McIlroy if he had the distance.
Yep.
Which is, like, that was his one misstep. I don't blame him a bit for milking it for all it's worth. Like, get your bag. Get your money. Like, go for it. If you've got the opportunity, if something happened and I were to get my 15 minutes of fame, like, buddy, I'm going to sign every endorsement deal you put in front of me. I don't care what it is I'm endorsing. I'm going to do it. If he hadn't have said that one thing, I feel like he would be universally loved by everybody. I feel like that one thing is what put him off to a lot of people.
He's just got like a little bit of an ego. I mean, again, I don't know that I don't know how you wouldn't in that situation between the hole out hole in one and the chip and putt on 18 to extend it. I mean, but like that should have been the pinnacle. And then like go do your YouTube videos with, you know, good, all these people, go do your sponsorships. But man, it was like 2 or 3 weeks straight where it was like, I was seeing him in Popeyes and Canes ads. Like it was like everything. Yeah. Which again, you're only going to be not, I don't want to say relevant. That seems rude, but like really relevant for so much time. Go get the money you can off of it. And at least, you know, you cemented your story. Like that documentary is going to be awesome in 30 years. I'll go back and watch that forever. But
yeah,
you know, I don't know. Hopefully he can kind of turn it around and just kind of be a little bit more casual at this point.
Yeah, I'm block partied out.
Yeah.
Give me all the block party. I'm good. There's another one coming behind him. Because his kid, I've seen videos of his kid hitting it a mile.
I don't care.
I think there's something the fans connect with where it's like seeing a dude that's just a guy go play with the pros. Like we all want to see that. The tour just doesn't, you know, necessarily between some random events where it's celebrities. Like we want to go see a guy that's really good at golf, but nowhere near, you know, these guys' level, and then go play, you know, a couple rounds with him.
But that 2023 PGA was just magical. Like you can't top that. That was just a fairy tale run that was just huge. And
you couldn't script that in Hollywood. They wouldn't script it because it's almost too under. It's like Disney happy ending.
Unrealistic. Yeah.
It's like Tin Cup.
It was great, and he should milk it. I'm glad he's doing his thing. And like I say, like his kid hits it a mile. His kid could be a player.
One guy who does love to milk it is co-owner Brent. Constantly, the block party continues. Big brick emoji, the siren. he loves to tweet about blocky. Quote, little quote, the goal this week was to kind of show my kid, caddy Ethan, the nuances of playing golf, and I think I did. Keep it in the fairway off the tee, hit the green. If you miss the green, get up and down, make a conservative chip, and then be a decent putter. I think I showed him a good way to do it. And if I finish third, fourth, or fifth, or whatever it is, as long as I'm in the top 20, I'm going to Quail Hollow, and I'm very happy. That was a quote from Michael Block. So he's on to Quail Hollow. He will be teeing it up at the PGA Championship this year in a couple weeks. We'll see how he does.
MC.
I mean, everything needs to go right, for a PGA pro to kind of get into the mix that deep like he did in 2023.
Yeah.
But you never know. Like, these guys are good. They're able to go out there and shoot, you know, 65 if everything comes together. They're that good. But they're playing in the toughest conditions against the top field in golf. So it's a tall task.
And it's as you said earlier, it's a big boy golf course. So I don't know if the distance is going to make a difference to these guys a ton, but it could come into play here for sure.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
It's just the fatigue of him being in contention once, and then the hype is like he's going to do it every time he tees it up. It's like, come on.
I don't know if people believe that, but like,
he's hyped up like it.
Tim, we did have that for a little bit, right? Because he was getting like sponsors exemptions into events. And it was like, you know, the first two was like, okay. And then I think there was a third one. And then, he missed the cut. Like he played the desert classic, I think it was. And then he played one of the events in Texas, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah, but like those events, I mean, it's similar to what we've talked about. Like I know we talked about maybe adding, I think Mike proposed like maybe adding some celebrities to some of these lower tier tournaments. At least one of those tournaments was one of those lower tier tournaments where, hey, if anybody's talking about this tournament, then we've succeeded. Like we've done great things. So just riding the wave is all that was. And who is he as somebody who just came off a top 15 at a major championship to say no to any sponsor invite? Like he absolutely should play. Absolutely. He's got more game and more chance in that situation than like we talked about, like Grant Horvat would have. And that's no slight to Grant. Like he's not saying that he's going to go and finish top 15 in a major.
Right. And honestly, like, go ahead, Joey.
No, I was going to ask who you think they pair him with. Do you think they try to get fancy with the pairings, try to get a little bit more eyeballs?
No, I don't know. I think this
with Rory.
No, that's not happening.
Not like
but
that.
I feel I feel,
throw him with Homa.
I don't think that they're gonna put him in a marquee pairing, to be honest. I mean, they'll show like some of his shots and stuff on TV, but I don't think that the Michael Block story kind of speaks for itself. Like, I don't think they're gonna be lumping him in with like a super group or anything like that. And it made sense for them to grant him sponsors exemptions at the time because he's drawing eyeballs. Like, people, that was one of the biggest stories of the year. Like, people are going to tune into those tournaments to see him. So it made sense.
I think it's a story, not a personality.
More it's a story. Exactly. Yeah. Joey, let's shift gears to the President's Cup in 2026, which is being held at Medina. Captains have been announced. So Brant Snedeker has been named captain for the U.S. team. Jeff Ogilvie will be captain for the international team. You know, both of these guys have been involved with the teams for several years now. Just wanted to get your guys' thoughts on it. Medina is an amazing course, classic golf course. I've been there. I was there in 2019, I think, for the BMW. It's a great course. Lots of history. One of the best courses, in my opinion. I loved it there. It was awesome. So I can't wait for a President's Cup there. What do you guys think about the captains? Were you expecting Brant Snedeker to get the call for something like this, or is it a bit outside the box?
Now, he's been a vice captain a couple of times, right? Like they seem to have been grooming him for this role is the right way to put it, but he's definitely been in contention for it. And ultimately, like the same thing we've talked about before, especially more so with Ryder Cups, you're going to start with your big guys that you want, and usually Tiger's up on that list, right? But until he says yes, like, he's not going to be the captain. In the meantime, you got to get some other guys going for it. Snedeker's been there. He's been a vice captain, like I just said, several times. So it seems like they were getting him ready for a spot. And to be honest, on the United States side, President's Cup captaincy is like a good soft landing spot, a good place to kind of audition for a future Ryder Cup spot, because ultimately we should win fairly easily. But they're getting better on the international side, Joey. I get you, but ultimately we should probably win. So it's a good little soft landing spot for some of these guys.
I thought you were talking about the Ryder Cup for a second. Because you were just talking about
it. No.
I thought you were going to jinx us. I said, whoa.
No, not the Ryder Cup. That's much more difficult.
Yeah.
Quote from Sneds. It's a tremendous honor to be named U.S. team captain for the 2026 President's Cup. I'm looking forward to leading our guys into Medina for what will certainly be an amazing week of golf. He also talked about representing my country in team competition has been a highlight of my career, and I will lean on those experiences to ensure we are prepared and ready to compete against what I know will be a unified and determined international team. We'll see if the international team has the live guys back at that point, because so far they have not been entertaining those guys, right, for the team. And it all has to do with the President's Cup being a PGA Tour led entity, I believe, right? Is that kind of the reasoning for that? Yeah. And then Jeff Ogilvie as well is taking the reins for the international team. He's played on three consecutive international teams, 2007, 2009, and 2011. He's got a 7-6-1 record. He said, the President's Cup has been a significant part of my career. I'm honored to take on the role of captain of the international team. Since Ernie Els debuted the Shield in 2019, the international team spirit has intensified and grown as we have rallied around this symbol. They always kind of play into the rebrand of the international team, and they're doing the same thing this year. And it's true, like, it's been a revitalization for the international team. They've been more competitive in recent years compared to the previous years. So, I mean, they've taken a good step in that regard for sure. But we'll see if the live guys are able to play. And I would assume they're not, because I don't really see how much would have changed in that regard from a year ago, right?
It's just interesting. It's so interesting watching the Americans play in the President's Cup and the Americans that play in the Ryder Cup. It's literally like two different teams. when they're in the President's Cup, they're having fun. They look like the European team in the Ryder Cup. They're high-fiving each other. Everything's great. They're laughing up the fairways. They're hitting great shots. They're rallying around each other. And then they go play in the Ryder Cup, and it's a completely different team. They're tight. They're nervous. They're anxious. They play like it. They act like it. And they get smoked like it. And that's just – I don't know what the disconnect is between the two and preparing a captain – to or prepping a captain to do the international or the President's Cup and then thinking how they do there will make them a future Ryder Cup. If that were the case, we should dominate the Ryder Cup too, because we dominate the President's Cup. But it just is so weird how they're so completely different in the two events. It's like watching two different countries.
No, I mean, some of that's like there's a difference in the international side and the Europeans, right? Like the European, historically, the European level of play has been much higher than what the internationals could put together. That's changing now because you see a lot more international players as the game has kind of grown, as much as I hate those words, like grow the game, all that stuff. The game's kind of grown. You're seeing these kind of wave of guys. And but honestly, what it is a lot of these guys, you're seeing them who were really young when Tiger was kind of at his peak and they kind of were falling into the game at that point. As worldwide as he was at the time. I don't know that saying that it's two different things from like two different teams entirely from President's Cup to Ryder Cup versus and tying it into prepping a captain for it it's just, I think the level of competition between the Europeans versus the internationals is so different. And two, Tim, you got to take into account the history. Like historically, it's easy for us to go into President's Cups thinking that we're going to win. Because we do most of the time. What happens in the Ryder Cup most of the time? We lose, right? So, of course, we're going to be a little more tight going into the Ryder Cup than we are the President's Cup.
Yeah, but we play poorly in the Ryder Cup. We don't play good. Like, you watch the matches, and a lot of the Europeans aren't going out there shooting 59s. I mean, we bogey holes that we play poor golf. And that's the difference is, you know, we make a lot more birdies in the international event than we do, or the President's Cup event, than we do the Ryder Cup. It's just, we don't play well. Like, I don't know why it is, but we don't hit the ball good. We don't handle the pressure very good. It's all of it. And yeah, I get the Europeans are a little bit better, but, or a little bit better competition and the history of it. But Americans just have a problem playing well, simply.
All right. We're going to shift gears here and talk about the LIV world ranking points, official world golf ranking points for LIV guys. This began when Sportico put out a report which said that LIV was in advanced talks with the official world golf ranking to receive world golf ranking points. Now, incoming, the chairman of the world golf ranking, Trevor Immelman, responded to these reports. He essentially poured cold water on it for now, and he said nothing has changed. The current situation is the same as it has been for the past year. He said they have not put any application in. Whether that happens or not, I guess time will tell. The ball is in their court. So it seems like there was a report out there about this, potentially about them being in discussions. And then now it seems like the official world golf ranking is kind of denying those reports. So, I mean, somebody's lying, right? Somebody's lying about it. We just don't really know who. The bigger question is, should LIV get official world golf ranking points? And I know this will be a spirited debate between Tim and Hutch, but fellas are ready to go at it. Let's hear it.
Real quick before I let y'all absolutely kill each other live. it was weird because it sounds like Immelman's more just like in that discussion, I would expect it to be more like whether or not anyone would deem them worthy of one world points. They're making it sound like, hey, like if LIV would want to, we would you know, probably let them. It sounds like they're making it say where like Liv has zero intentions to do that. So that's definitely interesting that it's not the other way around. I would expect Liv to want to be in discussions with that and, you know, vice versa, but y'all go at it.
Tim, I'll let you go ahead, brother.
I just, the world ranking points are a joke anyway. So why would Liv care?
Why? Well, they haven't put in an application, so maybe they don't care.
Yeah, they probably don't.
So, but why do you think they're not deserving of points?
What? Because they don't play tournaments.
Tim, come on.
You can tell me.
They played a tournament this last weekend that had a better record than the one in Texas.
That was a funly cute exhibition with lots of team logos and, you know, a shotgun start and beers everywhere and music playing. It was a fun scramble. It was a fun scramble format that they happened to play stroke play.
Format? What are you talking? They played shotgun
tournaments. I mean, dude, Liv, the format of Liv was 72 holes, they would already get more credibility than they do now. But they play a senior tour event. These guys can't even hack it for 4 days. They get paid $60 million just to sign up, just to get signed to their league. They can't play 4 days of golf.
Who says they can't? They play the format that they play the format that's presented to them. Like, what do you?
All right, like, fellas, hold the thought. I need to jump in for a sec just to kind of reset the stage on this, because Flushing at Golf on X, who reports extensively on Liv, pretty tuned in to what's going on with the league. He's been right on like most of the stuff that he's reported on, in fairness to him. And he kind of had more in-depth analysis and updates about this. He said, talks are progressing between Liv Golf and the official World Golf Ranking for the Liv Golf League to receive points. Multiple conversations have taken place, including an in-person meeting between Liv Golf CEO Scott O'Neill and official World Golf Ranking Chairman Trevor Immelman at the Masters. Sorry, I can't speak right now. He said, in order to advance these discussions, Liv Golf will need to make some changes to the league's format, and they are prepared to do so. Most notably, all players finishing in the quote-unquote drop zone will be automatically relegated from the league at the end of the season. The only way to return will be to earn a spot via the promotions event or the international series on the Asian Tour. It's unclear when world ranking points for Liv Golf events can be expected, but both sides have shared a vision to move the sport forward. So, I mean, that's what he has to say about this. It seems like there's been some sort of progress being made on this. I mean, I would probably, Sportico is not just going to put out a random report like that, right? Like, they don't typically carry water for Liv Golf at Sportico. Yeah. Actually, in fact, a lot of the stuff they put out is very PGA Tour centric, with a lot of the numbers and the data, that kind of stuff, right? So I'm led to believe that this is probably an accurate report, that they are in discussions, and this tweet from Flushing It kind of confirms that.
But why agree that the world ranking points are kind of a joke anyway? So why don't they just, if they're going to have talks about it, and if Liv is so interested in world golf ranking points, and they think, even though everyone thinks it's a joke, why not just start over and figure out a different format to get all these guys world ranking points?
Well, I mean, I don't get why Liv even would want, I don't see why they would even want them. I mean, if you're going to have to change your format now, if they're looking to just become well-respected or just maybe a little bit more official, sure. But I mean, if the points are going to get you exempt, if you're not going to get exempt into an event because you're on Liv anyway, then the ranking points wouldn't even really be effective.
I think that's the main thing though, Joey. Like, and maybe the leadership of the tour is not really as concerned about the world golf ranking points, but the membership is, the players, right? Yeah. Like, they don't want to be relying on special exemptions or having to play in through these new guidelines that some of these majors have put in place to get in. Like, the easiest and simplest and tried and truest way to get into a major championship, well, first off, is to win one, right? And then you're in. But then secondly, it's by your world ranking points. So I think that's the big thing. They got a lot of these players under the guise of you're eventually going to be able to earn world ranking points. That hasn't happened yet. I think it should happen. I don't think you get a lot of people like Tim who is hating on Liv and the format, and you can say all you want about the music and that they wear shorts even though they don't anymore, and that it's an exhibition. It's a real tournament. They really played for real money this past weekend, and Bryson really won.
They played for Monopoly money.
Fellas, no, here's no, why.
It's real money. Like, it's a real tournament.
Guys, it's very simple. This is why Liv wants world ranking points. Out of their entire team, out of their entire league, two guys in the Liv Golf League are in the top 50 in the world.
Exactly.
Two guys. And I mean, some of these drop-offs are just staggering. Huge. DJ. Here's some pre-live rankings versus current rankings, courtesy of National Club Golfer. John Rahm, 73rd in the world right now. I mean, I think we could all agree that that's
a joke.
Yeah. He was third going into live. Cam Smith was second going into live. He's 135 now. DJ went from 13 to number 722. Brooks Koepka is number 315 in the world. I mean, even Joaquin Niemann, after playing all these majors and having pretty good results, is number 83. I mean, and then you go down the line, there's just some insane draw-offs. There's Kevin Na, 1144.
There's a certain level of respect that comes from having players ranked highly in the official world golf ranking. That's not to say that the official world golf ranking is not a deeply flawed system, because it is. It is. I think most people would agree that Data Golf's ranking system is way better. But there is a level of prestige that comes from having that. Ultimately, people can think what they want of the tour. They can think it's a minor league tour, whatever, until they've got people where they can say, hey, we have the quote-unquote number one player in the world, or we have the number two player in the world. We have X amount of top five players in the world. The average fan is not going to hear that and say, you know, oh, I need to go watch that, because these players that realistically they are top five players in the world, right? You've got Bryson, you've got Rahm. Everyone would agree those guys are probably top five players in the world. But the average fan is not going to go watch them because they're not ranked as such.
The problem is that the LIV tournaments are non-cut and they play three-fourths of a tournament. So how do you divvy up the world ranking points when the PGA guys, they can actually get cut from a tournament.
Same way you get points for these signatures events. There's no cuts that don't in have
the
any lives, cuts.
None. You can play all 3 days. So you could shoot 75, 75, 61 and make more points than a guy that shot 75, 75 and missed a cut in a tour. That's not fair either. So how are they going to make it fair for both leagues?
They play non-cut events on the PGA formats? Tour too.
How are they going to make it? My question to you is, how are they going to make it fair when the two tours are completely different setups?
They're going to have to change some things. Like, that's
for sure.
100%.
Yeah. I don't know if they can.
John listed out some of the changes that they're going to make. And ultimately, like, in part of that with the relegation stuff, it's fair completely that people that should be relegated, like Bubba Watson, was exempt from being relegated last year because he was a team captain. He shouldn't be earning points for that stuff. He shouldn't be in the quote-unquote major leagues. But they're going to make changes, Tim. They're open to making changes.
I understand they're going to make changes, Hutch, but you still haven't answered my – you dance around the bush making excuses for LIV when I'm asking you how are they going to fix the cut. It doesn't matter. There's one tournament – one league has no cuts. One league has a cut. You have to find a way make it work, and right now there's no way. There's not a fair enough way for one side or the other to make it work.
Neither of us are the mathematicians that know how to fix this, Tim, but I will just end on, there are PGA Tour events that are non-cut events.
What, how many? Two?
There's several. Yeah. How many signature events are there this year?
They're non-cut, right? Seven or eight non-cut events this season.
Yeah, there's what, 14 live tournaments? Eight.
Let's move on. We've got the discussion post of the week. There's a video, so let's play the video.
Which one are we doing?
The is this count as a hole in one?
Okay.
Hold on. Audio starts in a sec. It's a weird video. Oh, so shit.
Yeah, that counts.
That counts?
Ooh. Yeah. Sorry.
If it happens to me, yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that's true.
If it happens to one of my buddies, no way.
I don't the rule book, so the ball has I don't know what the rule book says. I would assume it's something along the lines of if the ball has submerged below the level in which the hole is cut, I doubt there's any ruling that it has to be on the inside of the plastic, like I can't imagine it got that far to say that because some courses don't even, like old courses wouldn't even have that plastic. So,
yeah.
Look, that's it. It's below the ground. If I lay on the ground and look at the pin, it's in the hole.
Not see it.
Sorry, I'm counting. He probably dunked it. He literally dunked it in the hole.
But it's a poorly installed cup, right? Correct. Like there's maintenance issues there that are causing that to occur because on a professional golf course, this isn't happening.
No.
Right? Ball's not going to land like that. So we're not even having this conversation. Like, this is some municipal golf course that is just poorly maintained, probably.
But again, like, we're amateurs, right? Like, if that happens to just a regular, like, 15... Yeah, absolutely. Count that. Go have your fun. Buy everybody drinks in the clubhouse. Like, you can tell everybody... Because... And we live in a time where there's pictures and videos of everything now, but ultimately, like if this has happened 20 years ago, you could say you made the hole in one and nobody's going to say anything about it 20 years down the line. Like, yeah, but the plastic was bent and you really slam dunked it a half inch away from the cup and it just happened to stick in the cup. Like, come on. That's a hole in one. Tim's old though. He's going to tell us no.
I'm just going to say no because it wasn't inside the cup. And I don't know. Look at the shot.
Can you put the picture back up?
The ball is outside of the cup. Like the way the ball landed, look, it landed. It
looks in the cup
out on the side and it went into the cup. It didn't go straight on top.
Wait, so it's in the cup
and the cup was a bad cup. It went in at an angle and it took a chunk out and it went into the cup and the cup was put in properly. And that's not a hole in one. A hole in one is when you get it inside the cup.
Tim, so it's in the cup. It is inside the circumference of the hole.
Hole had been cut properly, and because there's no way that golf ball had enough force to go through the ground and like push the cup that far in without the cup being up at least a little bit to where the lip caught it and made it fold the plastic in.
Right.
There's no shot that it was that flush, even though the rest of the cup looks pretty flush.
I'm just gonna walk up to him and shake his hand and say, "Nice birdie."
That's crazy, Tim, you would be 100% fan as a hole in one.
Tim, the majority disagrees with you wholeheartedly, very strongly. So we ran a very unscientific poll on the Nuclear Golf Pod account. 500 votes. 91% of respondents said yes. Clearly, that's an ace. So you're with the 9% there, Tim. And somebody said, if you didn't count that, Hollywood 99 said, if you didn't, that would be the last time we golf together.
Oh, break my heart.
She's
so sad.
I've been telling y'all, Tim is an elitist. For weeks, I've been telling y'all. He's an elitist golf curmudgeon who hates everything new and fancy about the game.
No, that's not true. So, not true at all.
Boom_sausage said, technically it's in the hole, just not the cup, but they don't call it a cup in one. So nice ace, buddy.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It's a good way to word it. So it's got to be in the wording somewhere.
I'm surprised we didn't get somebody to tell us what the official rule of golf says, but I think that's a hole in one.
Okay. Let's go to viral video of the week. Crazy moment. Just I'll tee it up here. It's up. The video's from Roger Steele on X. A plane kind of makes an emergency landing at Riviera Country Club in Pacific Palisades, lands on the course. I mean, it's not really an emergency landing. It's kind of a crash landing. No injuries or anything like that, thankfully. But it's all caught on video, so we'll roll as the viral video of the week.
I'm moving, not moving. I'm not fucking. I'm not fucking. There we go. Holy
shnikes. Holy fuck. Are they okay? Yeah. I love the I love the guy in the background that yells stop.
Just put on the brakes.
Might be the only incident in the history of the world in which a plane is. We won't say crash landing. We'll say whatever we need to say. But coming at you and someone's chuckling. The guy was literally chuckling, like saying, pull the cart forward. I don't know what kind of CBD gummies these guys were on or what they were passing around, but they were entirely too calm for the situation.
Props yeah, either that or they were so drunk they thought they were imagining what was happening. Like that's insanity. If I see a plane coming at me like that, I'll record it, but we got to get out of the way. Got to get out of the way.
Also, great camera job. I mean, I've seen fights get worse camera jobs. That was impeccable. Yeah. 10 out of 10.
He was committed.
Good job to the pilot. That was honestly an insane landing.
Yeah, the local course that I play at last year had an incident where a plane flew into the side of the building. And it wasn't crowded enough where people caught it on camera, but the cameras outside the building that caught it showed people running for their lives. The three people that were on the putting green were running for their lives. So like when these guys were just chilling, like I was like, what are you guys doing? You know, there's a plane coming towards you, right?
Okay. Here's some insight from Turbine Traveler on X. They said, wild footage shows a Cessna aircraft tail number N3753L making a heroic landing at Riviera Country Club in LA. Single engine plane carrying three people was en route to Santa Monica Airport, just 5 miles away, when the pilot was forced to bring it down on the golf course. Eyewitnesses, including stunned golfers, captured the moment as the pilot expertly used full flaps and precise rudder control to navigate a tight 90-degree turn and avoid nearby trees. The LA Fire Department confirmed there were no injuries, and the NTSB will investigate the cause of the emergency. Wild scenes if you were on the golf course and you were witnessing that as you were playing your round.
That's a story. Another story you'll be able to tell forever.
Yeah.
Wasn't like the we were there path, when the plane landed.
Wasn't the flight path crazy too? I thought that was wild too.
Yeah.
Go ahead. It's just like what you guys are saying though. Just all props to the pilot though, for real. Cause like if you get something stall out like that, that could easily end in disaster for either yourselves or somebody on the ground. So big props to that pilot for remaining calm under pressure and getting that thing on the ground safely.
Yep. Crazy scenes. We're going to do our NHL playoff picks for the remainder of the playoffs, but first we're going to get into the Truist Championship this week, Philadelphia Cricket Club. It's a signature event on the PGA Tour with a pretty stacked field. This is one that you guys will probably be tuning in for, I imagine, at least on the weekend, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's back. The PGA Tour is back. Had a couple weeks with kind of some lower tier events, getting outshined by other tours, but they're back and they're back in full swing this week. And so, like you were saying, John, it's a stacked field signature event at from what I understand, is a really nice course. So it's going to be cool to see. They have a creator thing at this one too, don't they?
They do, yeah. It's a Creator Classic event this week. This is the second Creator Classic of the season. I believe there's one more after this.
So it's going to be a cool little week. I don't know who – gosh, I need to think about who I'd like to win, but it's definitely a stacked field, and it's going to be a good week for the tour.
Jordan Spieth actually received a sponsor's invite to this week's signature event. Who else? Ricky Fowler, I believe, got a sponsor's invitation as well. Gary Woodland. And then it was Keith Mitchell that rounded out the exemption list.
Yeah.
But it's a big week. We've got Hovland playing, Homa, Sung J.M. Morikawa, like all the big guys are in the field. Xander, Adam Scott, Rory's playing. Rory, Sahith, JT, Zalatoris, Cam Young. So lots of guys in the field this week. It's a limited field, right? 72 players are in the field.
I think as far as picks go, like I'm gonna ride that fresh caddy wave and go with Morikawa. See if that doesn't give him just a little bit of a boost. See what happens. But I'd like Colin this week.
You like him Colin with Joe Griner on the bag?
Yep. Yeah, that's my pick.
I'm gonna take Ludwig.
Ooh. Okay.
Did you guys happen to see Eric Van Ruyen's comments?
No. Yeah, where he started with, "How honest do you want me to be?"
Yeah, let me read it out. I'll read it out for you guys. So Eric Van Ruyen, this is from Brently Romine on X. He said he was asked about next week's $20 million no-cut Truist Championship via the Aeon Swing 5. And he responded, "How honest do you want me to be? I hate it," laughing. He said, "I strongly believe that the strongest fields are the ones with the most players in them. The guys on the PGA Tour are so good. It's so deep. I get that you've got the Scotties of the world, the Rorys of the world, and people want to see them. It's entertaining. Like the PGA Championship coming up, for example, I think it's the strongest field in the game, similar to the players. I love competing. So selfishly, I want to compete against those guys. Again, really proud of playing my way into it." Brently Romine said, "Van Ruyen has been consistent on his opposition to the PGA Tour's new signature event model. At last year's API, he shared with Golf Channel his opinion of remarks made by Rory and Wyndham Clark, wishing for a leaner, meaner tour. He said, 'I saw Wyndham's comment 2 years ago. Wyndham was in the 100-125 spot. He would have lost his card, and now he's a major winner. And all of a sudden, you know, and Rory, I know he wants it to be more cutthroat. This is the most cutthroat sport there is. You miss the cut, you're gone. You're not making any money. The NBA has over 300 guys playing. We have 144 guys playing.'" So, I mean, there's guys that do not support these limited field events because they want deeper, like stronger, like longer list of guys with cuts, right? Yeah. That's the argument that those type of guys are making. Any of those middle of the road PGA Tour players are not going to be in favor of these limited no cut field events where the top guys get in all the time. So
it's more money for these events too, right? The purse is bigger.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, but I mean, just go play better at the mid-level events and then qualify for the short. Exactly. I mean, like, sorry. It's just kind of how it works. Like, I mean, again, obviously they want to have the long shot ability of coming in during a full field and beating Scottie Scheffler, but like realistically, that's probably not in your best effort if you couldn't even get scratch a top 30 in, you know, a mid-level
Barracuda
tournament. Yeah, like, sorry. Yeah, people get hot at the right time. I get that, but, you know.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. It's like you say, John, the mid-level guys are never going to support this, but I like what Joey's saying, like, play better. I mean, it's like complaining about getting to getting to the last week of the season, the tour championship, and complaining that it's only 30 guys. Well, you knew what it was. And
it's like 128 teams in March Madness. Like, no.
Yeah. You knew what it was. You knew what it was, and you knew what you needed to do to qualify, and you didn't do it. Play better. Yeah. If you can't, that's fine. You could make a nice living. That's cool. But if you want to be in the elite of the elite, play better.
All right, we got to get to some NHL playoff talk. You know, we're down to the final eight teams, right? We got the Jets and the Stars, the Leafs and the Panthers, Golden Knights and the Oilers, and the Capitals and the Hurricanes. Just who are you guys picking this round, and even your Stanley Cup winner?
I don't watch hardly any hockey, so I'm going to be an absolute buzzer and take the Leafs to win it all. I'm sorry, John. I know you hate it. I know you hate to hear it. I've got like three buddies that are from kind of the Toronto area, so I'm like, it's the only allegiance I have to the hockey besides the Preds and the Flyers. So,
all right. Wow.
I don't even know if this team does it the same way that the NFL team does, but Jets. I don't know if that's how that works, but it used to be the Thrashers. So let's go Thrashers, Jets, Thrasher, Jets, Jets, Thrashers.
Yeah, I'm gonna take Winnipeg and Edmonton in the one conference finals, and the Caps and the Leafs in the other conference finals, and then I got the Caps against the Oilers and the Caps winning it all.
I've actually been calling like the Jets to go all the way for a lot of the time this season, because every time we played them, they're so hard to play against. They're so good. They just shut you down defensively and give you nothing. They had an insane win last night. They tied up with 1.6 seconds left in the game and then won it in double OT. Just unbelievable for the people and the fans in Winnipeg to witness that game live. That's crazy. But I mean, Florida and the Maple Leafs are already underway in their series. It's 4-1 for the Leafs tonight after the second period. So,
yeah, we got some messages about that game already.
Sounds like they're off to a good start.
Just check your texts. Lighten it up.
Yeah, Brent's fired up.
Would that be co-owner Brent?
Yeah,
co-owner and ambassador.
Co-owner Brent, lighten it up for the Leafs. You folks at home don't know, but our two co-owners kind of faced off in the first round of the playoffs last week with the Maple Leafs. And I don't know who John's team is. I just know they played off with each other. This the Ottawa? Is that right?
Yeah, Senators.
Yeah, they're Senators, done.
Yeah.
But they had a good season. Like, to even make it to the playoffs is an achievement after the last 7 years. So we'll take it. They made it to the playoffs. They were competitive. They friggin' three games go to overtime. Yeah. So, I mean,
right there.
Plenty of chances.
Right there. Like, those games can go either way, honestly, right? Like, it's almost like a flip of a coin when it gets to OT, because you've been so even throughout the entire game in most cases.
Yeah,
you go to OT, anything can happen. So,
and it's like one team could be dominating the whole time, and all it takes is one shot.
Yeah, it's
hockey
not,
playoffs are awesome.
They are. It's awesome, and
like I couldn't imagine being a diehard fan like you got, like you and Brand, just overtime, like the stress levels through the roof.
It's very, very stressful. Yeah, it's gotta be tough. Yep. Well, fellas, I think this is probably a good spot to wrap it. It's been an awesome show. As always, we appreciate you guys' support and for tuning in, watching live. We really appreciate it. Just a reminder, you can stream this after. It's always live on X and live on YouTube, but you can always watch it or listen to us as well on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, as well as Amazon Music. You can find us a few hours after this show concludes. It'll be up there, and you guys can tune in there. Until next week, my name is John. I've been joined tonight by Tim, Hutch, and Joey. We're signing off. Hope everyone enjoys the truest, and we'll see you guys next Monday on the next episode of the Nuclear Golf Podcast.